Next speaker is Marcin Jakubowski from Missouri, USA. He is a doctor of physics by education. His thesis was about atomic fusion. So he is a technologist of wide scope. And he's done almost the opposite of what he was supposed to do by his studies. He reinvented a physical support system that really makes something like self-determined living possible. And that's a gigantic task, a task that is composed by many different components. And I'm very curious how you will react to this endeavor, which I hope will work as a community of villages all around the world.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so please take one of the little handouts. You can look at it online, openfarmtech.org/weblog. It's the post. This talk is a post that's on the 26th of March. So if you have a computer, you can look at this too. What we'll do is I'll introduce the topic. We're going to go to a little 10-minute video. I wasn't planning on that, but since we've got all the sound and video, we can view that just to get you a real picture of what we're doing on the ground, because we've got some theory and some practice to boot. So the talk today is about building the world's first replicable, open source, off-grid, global village to basically transcend the survival and evolve to freedom. That's a big task. We're talking about re-engineering civilization. I want to go a little bit into what this all means. Global village. What is this packed term? First of all, global village. We're talking about a globally linked community, but also with a real economy, a real village. Okay. Off-grid, we mean, and we're not talking about not having electricity. That's one way to go off-grid. Or buying some expensive solar panels to provide your electricity if you can have the money. We're talking about building our own solar power system. Plus getting off-grid on the financial systems and on the productive systems in terms of 100% local food, energy, housing, and fabrication capacity on a small scale. So this is SMAREs, the small scale republics, all that kind of stuff. This is a natural fallout of this. Open source, we know what that means. Open documentation is what it's about. We document all our work. And replicable, that's a big one. To make something replicable, not only do you have to be open source, but you have to teach people and be able to capitalize the physical infrastructure. So if you develop optimal, low-cost means to do this, you're in business. That's what we mean by our term. So today we've done some physical work in terms of, I'll explain the whole construction set, but let's just watch a video to see what we've done on the ground so far. It covers the building and construction and agricultural implement side of things.
Here's a little story of our building adventures at Factory Farm, which leads up to the present work with the CEB Press. We started with raw land and built an earth-bagged structure 2 years ago. We built a cordwood addition a year after that. Turns out earth-bagged building and cordwood building is both difficult work. All along, I've been thinking that compressed earth bricks are the best. They're strong, they're fast to build with, and they're 100% natural. What more could I ask for? So here came the CEB press, the compressed earth block press. I took some metal from the custom fab shop, a bunch of drill holes, and a tad of welding, plugged this into the tractor, fired it up, and pressed the first brick. We moved out to test the CEB press in a field. We built ourselves an open source tractor first, because we weren't satisfied with the industrial tractors that just kept breaking. So with our new tractor, which we called the Life-Giving Lifetime Design Life Track, we began to build. We started to build an addition right behind the stick frame greenhouse, so the greenhouse would not be blown over by winds that huff and puff quite strongly around here. We started to clear off the area, but the front end loader was not much good on hard, clayey soil. We tried some disking, but the disking did not go too deep either. We then sampled the soil, which we tilled with our rototiller, to test if it would work for bricks. It has to have sufficient clay to stick together, but not too much to make it crack. The soil was go. The tiller was not our best friend either, so we needed something that would really sink its teeth into the ground. So we built the world's first open-source toothball, design rationale included. This worked well. We were able to mound up pile after pile of good soil, or gold, for CB brick pressing. We covered the pile diligently with plastic sheeting when the weather was foul. In the meantime, we built some trusses for the addition. 2x4 lumber was put together into 32-foot-long trusses, 2 feet high, with oriented strand board connecting plates. A truss like this cost us $50 a pop in materials. We also got the gravel truck in for the addition foundation. We then did a test run to see how many bricks we could press in a sample run. Last minute adjustments, and we were ready to go. We moved the machine into position. We tilled, we mixed in a little sand, we raked it fine. And then we pressed 4 per minute, 52 bricks in 13 minutes, with manual loading with 5-gallon buckets. If we could do that the whole day, we would press about 2,000 bricks. In all reality, it takes 15 people to load the machine as fast as the machine could produce bricks. The back-breaking work is shoveling dirt into buckets and lifting them to feed the machine. We continued for 14 days of this, mostly with 2 or 3 people. The hard labor required separates big people from sucklings. We learned that such hard labor puts parties involved at severe risk of destroying friendships or even families. In all honesty, the version of the machine with a manually loaded hopper is not so useful because it's impossible to gather 15 people, so you're running the machine way under its capacity. With 2 people, we made 500 bricks per day on average. One can load enough soil for 250 bricks on a sustainable basis. That's the bottleneck. According to Soil Block Presses, a publication from 1988, the production rates of manual presses claim similar figures to what we did in practice with the Liberator, our machine. In our particular case, for the number of people we had, we could almost do what we did with a manual press. That's hard to admit, but it's the reality. See the YouTube example linked in the blog for what looks like an effective manual press. The point is, our machine displays its rated performance, where we think it can get 8 bricks per minute, only when we have a large hopper that we can load with a front-end loader. That's interesting. This makes me think that any mechanized press on the market with a small hopper like ours is really being oversold. Any of you CEB builders out there, what do you think? So we will be building the big hopper and testing the performance then. That's how we will sell the basic machine, the big hopper. So anyway, we pumped out almost 6,000 bricks in total and started to build our addition. We started by digging a shallow insulated foundation, insulated with 2-inch R10 pink foam. We used the backhoe, which was very effective. It moves from side to side by articulation of the tractor. Next, we put in the battery bank and stove into place before the walls were built. We leveled the foundation, tarred the bottom course of bricks, and started laying. Walls went up rather quickly, except when frost made it hard to get the bricks off our piles as they stuck to each other. Our soil mortar froze too, and a section of wall fell down when the mortar defrosted and shifted. We reinforced the walls with posts and started to use regular cement mortar mix. We then put on the top plate, stuck rebar down 3 feet into the wall through it, and started to install the trusses. We then laid the sidewalls, put OSB panels on the roof, and basically have the structure closed off. On the inside, we cut out windows on the back of the greenhouse and started installing some of these windows. That's where we are now. What needs to be done still? Finishing details, more straw on the roof. We are using polyethylene and carpet to line the roof, then straw. This should last 50 years. We will then put up another wall on the inside for a kitchen and utility space with stove lined with bricks on the outside. Then we'll park the tractor inside and start on the second prototype of the CEB with torch table fabrication included. We'll actually dig inside the building both to test the new CEB press, Liberator 2, and to dig ourselves a deeper workspace that may perhaps be converted to a basement. Not the usual way to do it, but it will probably work. Well, this is our field report on CEB building so far. Open source equipment, some local resources, makes for a healthy start. Now we almost have a good workshop space finished, so some real action can begin. If we're going to house 30 people soon, we've got to move. Crash course on
open source fabrication included.
Okay. That's a cutoff at the end of the video. Okay. Let's drop some theory about this now. We've seen the physical implementations of on the ground work. Explain our terms, so let's move on. What are we talking about here? We're talking about a global village construction set consisting of 41 key technologies which are sufficient to build a new economy, in fact, a new civilization. It's the stuff you use every day. We're talking actually about very simple things. It's cars, tractors, it's the food that you eat, and so forth. Essential items to a productive economy. So basically, just to back up a little bit, as far as how we selected the items, you start with the obvious, such as you need some food, energy, housing, transportation, technology items. Then we say, what is the most robust, optimal, and widely usable, economically significant, simplest way to do it? Okay. So with that, we say, here's our construction set. Now, there is actually a metric that I discuss this as far as how we did this, all the different properties of liberatory, productive, local, post-industrial, limited but sufficient set. It's the products, these items are all selected by the product selection metric. You can see that on the OSE proposal of 2008, which is on our wiki, you can find all of this. So we actually invite you, if you look at the OSE proposal title equals OSE proposal page, you can evaluate the things we have done. If you have better suggestions, let us know. Okay, so some simple things to say here. Everyone drives a car. If you eat, you're using a tractor, maybe not you yourself, but the people who are producing for you. You're using an agricultural combine, dairy. So I'm going through some of the things that are in the set. Orchard, sawmill, then you get into fabrication aspects, a small but limited set of robust tools that can produce the entire set itself. So you start with open source, pseudo open source items such as the CNC multi-machine, which is an open source project out there, an induction furnace for melting metal so you can start from scrap and recast civilization at the cost of scrap metal. We get into the energy aspect too, such as pyrolysis oil, which is any biomass can be turned to it. We have a solar concentrator, solar generator system. You might be familiar with RepRap, the 3D printer, but we like HydroRaptor, if you know more about that. That's another version of that. We use a steam engine, and that's all in a set. So moving on. As I said, I'll go into a little more detail about what these things are, but you've got housing and construction, local food systems, mobility, solar energy, fabrication, and implements that are used in construction, agriculture, and a lot of different support tasks such as power generation, sawmilling, etc., CEB pressing. So say you want to build yourself a village. Here's a construction set
of 41 pieces. So if we want to talk about fundamentally making a shift in society, we have to build it. So we want to make a case that this is doable, and we want to allow other people, basically massive replication of this to happen by optimizing a set to do this. We cover areas of agriculture, housing, energy, fuel, transportation, technology, all the things that you might need to build an economy. Here I go into a little more detail. So for example, for the food infrastructure, you have MicroTrack, a small walk behind tiller, the LifeTrack, the tractor that you've seen already, operating on land, feeding people. You also got a nursery, orchard. We put freeze-dried fruit powders as one key technology for drinks, bakery, dairy, haying, well drilling rig, solar power feeds. The blue items actually are not part of the set. They already exist, or we didn't create them, or they're easily accessible. Okay.
Housing. You've seen the compressed earth brick press and tractor combo. The other part of the set is a lumber sawmill. That's those two items, the sawmill and the CB press, are pretty much sufficient to do a lot of your building. And then on top of that, you've got other supporting equipment that all goes into the building of a home. Power infrastructure includes your fuel, space heating, electricity, so forth, cooking gas. We start with the sun. So if you look at actually the handout that I have for you, the ecology on the back of that reflects the flow of how you go from solar energy to either direct use through solar concentration or storing it as chemical fuels for later burning. And the noteworthy thing is that this is a real experiment that we're carrying out. We want to take about an acre of fuel grass crop, and each acre will get you about 4,000 pounds of sustainable hay per year, which is about 200 gallons of fuel, crude pyrolysis oil, that you can then burn in a Babington burner, flash steam generator, steam engine, basically steam engine power, to provide electricity and fuel. Oh, there's a gasifier there as well. For the LifeTrack tractor, for your housing electricity, and I kind of coined the UniMoss, like there's UniMog, there's this Mercedes-Benz multi-purpose vehicle. That's what that thing is. But the same technology that goes into the tractor can be used, the hydraulic power that you've seen. That can be applied in cars directly as a technology we have right now. So we're going to, so common, so Jaco and I, we will get into some collaboration, because this is something you can do today. You don't have to wait 20 years like more ambitious open source car projects out there. Okay. And then what about the fabrication aspect? There's five main tools that we use. We commonly use the MIG welder and plasma, well, not plasma cutter, we don't have that yet, but MIG welder, assembly and torch are the things we use. But as far as the technology base, the multi-machine is a CNC, computer numerically controlled milling, drilling, lathing, multi-purpose machine. The Hydroraptor is a RepRap 3D printer plus the plastic, which is in plastics, 3D printer in plastics, that's open source already available. And it also includes micro drill and micro mill for doing circuits. So you've got circuits taken care of right there. I'm actually meeting the Hydroraptor guy. He lives close to Manchester. I don't know if you know that. He's like a few miles out of town. So that's a good thing. I'll meet him Sunday. Then going off on the Hydra concept, Hydra meaning many-headed creature, Hydra table. You can have, we have a design of the torch table that you see up there that you can do with acetylene and plasma torch cutting, but you can also put on a laser head, a router, whatever other cutting element you want. You've got Hydra table there. Induction furnace. Now that's big stuff, because in fact, if you select one technology that's the most important, that would be the one, because while you can operate on metal for creating a new civilization with the tools above there, what about the metal resources? Well, for now, we are okay with using scrap metals that you can find in abundance as a byproduct of the fossil fuel economy. Later down the road, we'll address that by smelting aluminum from clay, which is everywhere. And that's can be done. The question is, do you have energy? So we're going to have to get up our energy system first. But if you have a flexible induction furnace, which is a flexible melter for metal, other processes like case hardening and metal extrusion, with the tractor itself, which can produce 20 kilowatts of power with our generator, we can run an induction furnace to get you 300 pounds of steel melted per hour, or about 2,000 pounds a day, which is way more than sufficient to have extreme productivity in terms of generating useful metal. So on this metal, you can do various further operations like casting, hot rolling, cold rolling, forging, all doable on a small scale to basically take care of rebuild the entire set and produce about 99% of the modern industry on a small scale. There are a couple of unique features I want to mention about this set.
In that, the first thing to start with is the extreme modularity. A lot of this stuff is just like the life track, is a bolt together assembly with stock steel parts. The really unique feature of the hypermodularity is the hydraulic motor and power cube. So for example, just two hydraulic motors power everything here, two types of motors. They're used in the wheels for the tractor, to spin a rototiller, to run the power takeoff generator. Very flexible if you have hydraulic drive. So we have the tractor, the car, and microtrack, the small-scale walk-behind tractor. They can use the same motors, plus the power unit itself, the power cube, once again. You can interchange that between the three by design. That's part of the features. That's radical modularity here. And then on top of that, you've got the pyrolysis oil feeding the steam engines or solar energy feeding steam engines. So you can end up with a whole ecology of technology based on steam engines, which are comparable to gas engines in terms of their efficiency. So from an ecological perspective, it actually makes sense. In fact, it could be twice as better as gas engines because the fuel yield for pyrolysis oil is 50% from the dry biomass. Instead of having a small fraction of very highly refined fuel, you burn it all, so you actually end up getting more if you're going to a local economy based on local biofuel. So from the ecological perspective, it makes sense. Well, the last figure on top there, your little induction melter, you can cast all of this equipment that's with the induction and the fab lab equipment. So it's self-replicable. So what are we doing about this? You've seen the tractor, CEB press, that produced bricks, had the backhoe, rototiller. On an agriculture front, we've got a nursery, some goat dairy, orchard, garden, chickens, etc. On the drawing board, all the stuff below there you see as models still on the drawing board. It's the torch table, sawmill, microtrack, which we're building right now. We're going through microtrack right now, and open source lathe. Okay, so you've seen a lot of this building action. I don't really have to explain that. There's some other good scenes, chickens, piglet in our cordwood house, rototiller, backhoe, solar cubicles that we're building for on-demand housing. And there's a hexayurt in the back in honor of Vinay. And some initial experiments with solar concentrator power, plus that's the picture of the Babington burner, flexible fuel burner that can build pyrolysis oil or any other oil. Okay, but the real deal is going through a complete product cycle. Right now, we haven't really taken anything to completion yet, up to a product that you can buy and that people can produce openly through an open business model. So to that effect, we're looking at building the second prototype of the CEB with a big hopper within about 2 weeks, and getting close to final checking that out, and I estimate it would be 2 months before we have real product release from today. We're building the soil pulverizer that will just mount right on the front end loader of the tractor, once again powered by one of the modular engine units. Then there's MicroTrack, which is a small scale walk behind tractor tiller that will provide the power for the CEB press, actually, because now we're going to have one person driving the tractor, the other person is going to be taking the bricks off the machine once they're done, and a microtrack will be the power source for this. And if you see that power cube on the back there, that thing could be attached, for example, on the quick attach of the tractor, and if in case the tractor engine goes out, you can use that as a backup, stuff like that. So the modularity with respect to the power source. And what we're driving at here is the concept of at-cost production, because if you open source the design process and even the fabrication capacity process, we actually paid for our workshop already by crowd donations by some of you here, including some of you here. So what we can do then is naturally give back by giving at-cost production. So where is the money? The money is the value of labor that we can then capture. Realistically speaking, I can be getting $50 per hour, and say the full CEB might take 40 hours to make. Well, there'll be $2,000 in labor for one full week of honest work. That does make sense. It's transformative, in fact. And Michel called us, for this reason, the most important social experiment in the world. We're trying to devise a different business model that can be potentially mainstreamable. And that's the bottom line goal. If you make a product that works, people don't care how you got to it. We just want to make stuff that works. Plus, we're one of the few growing enterprises in the Depression. The CB press is the first test case. If we succeed at it, we will be well on our way to the entire set, which is sufficient for a full economy. We focus on the tools of production, which is really what you call a money system, where the currency would be backed up by transparent production. So the way we think about it is, if we build this entire set, which is sufficient for a full economic process, then we'll be able to trade. And it would be as simple as us going through with a video camera to document the productive capacity and all that we have, and people will gain trust. So that's playing into the whole peer-to-peer model. This is the essence of it. The inverted dollar sign is money left, just like copy left, where copy left means that the copy is worth more. It's valuable. We really value the copy. Here, we value the copy more as well. All these tools are replicable and self-replicating, so this concept leads into abundance, into the fact that money kind of, it's a practical operational program for transcending the money thing of today, which is a real block for people doing what they truly need to do to fulfill themselves and make a better world. Okay, now here this gets really hairy, but you can do a simple economic analysis what it would cost you. Say you have this problem statement of setting up a little village, you know, using the technology that you have. Well, you can do that for about $1 million total for 30 people. So let's define the terms. What are we talking about? 100% food, energy, housing, sufficiency, plus the capacity to produce. And this is all that. You can look at the numbers, actually. So if you look at the various references, like, for example, the perennial agriculture page on the wiki, openfarmtech.org, I went through a calculation that shows in order to get all the plant and animal stock that you would need to feed yourself with 100% diet year-round, cost you about $3,000. It includes cows, plants, etc. And that you can purchase. Say you wanted to purchase that stock. Well, that's $90,000 right there for 30 people. If you can, for example, hire someone to produce your entire edible landscape. You can hire a permaculturist, which would take about 6 months to do the entire plant out for 30 people to make an edible forest, edible landscape that will feed you 100% year-round. And then you get into housing. How do you do that? Well, you can hire 4 people, $50 an hour. That's quite replicable. You can get them to work at that rate. About half a year it would take them to build yourself a cluster development plus a greenhouse and other structures. And I go through the... Please look at the... I mean, this is loaded with information. This thing is a couple of PhD theses on this one page right here. So you have to look at the references. But I did just go through some basic numbers to back up these costs. And if you look at the equipment base now, the entire tractor the tractor and all the implements, sawmill, CEB, all kinds of supporting infrastructure for building, which is outlined completely under Lifetrack Economic Analysis on the wiki.
It would cost you about $250,000 if you bought that today off the shelf. As far as off-grid electricity, well, you can just get regular expensive solar panels at $10 a watt and about $3,000 per person. If you want to buy the Fab Lab off-shelf, it will cost you about $150,000 conservatively to produce the to provide the tools that I've described, the 10 items that I described. So it's about $1 million. It's $830,000 total. And that's just the startup cost. We're not considering the yearly maintenance, which is actually the thing that's going to kill it. You can come up with $1 million perhaps by even getting 30 people at 30,000. That's a far stretch, but potentially doable. Once again, a social technology question. But what's going to kill you if you use modern industrial equipment is the maintenance and depreciation of about 10% per year. So you're ending up spending $100,000 per year to maintain just the infrastructure. How are you going to do that? Simply, you go work for the man and you can do it. But if you want to have a sustainable community, you want to get away from this, and we can. Imagine the Global Village Construction Set is fully developed with the 41 technologies. We're making a claim that you can build an entire village 100% based on sweat equity. So our program perhaps would be to charge a student, say $10,000 a year, for a 2-year immersion program where they will actually build the entire infrastructure as part of that work. Hey, how about that? So you can plant out, the agricultural base is quite simple. You can do all the propagation using plant propagation techniques. You can do a plant out at about 2 weeks per person. So I'm including time and cost in here. We're saying that if you could get 30 people together, you can do this. But more likely it's going to be perhaps what I see happening is you have one person who masters fabrication, another masters agriculture. These two people can organize a team of, say, 30 people. Or if they can't find the 30 people, they can go solo. And it's almost like a lot of this has been a one-man show today with us. I mean, it's feasible, especially if you have the tools available. But let's go further here. So say you want to plant out your agriculture. Well, say after you propagate all this stuff, you can plant it out in about 2 weeks per person. With DIY building and a 30-person team, about 90 days, including lumber brick preparation with optimized equipment. So you got your tractors, bulldozers, backhoes as part of this open source set. Then you have heavy equipment produced that, this is ridiculous. It's the kind of stuff you can almost laugh at, but except it's real if you have the fabrication infrastructure. But it would take you like $5,000 to buy scrap steel from the junkyard. And if you have all the fabrication capacity starting from the induction furnace and the metalworking processes and then the fab lab, the more standard fab lab pieces, it will cost you $5,000 for materials. So basically you're taking a look at what would the materials cost. $5,000 gets you 50,000 pounds of steel meltable with an induction furnace in a period of 3 weeks. That's what 50,000 pounds of steel would take you. Using the furnace I described. So you're seeing something like 1 year per person, under 1 year time that this could be done in. And I go through a little more details on this, go through the wiki under the 30-person village startup with GBCS. Very simple. But the point remains that if you can take charge of having the productive capacity, you can replicate these things at super low cost, and with a program that we're developing. And that's what we aim to do. You can do it at sweat equity. If you want to really change the world and learn the skills to build these villages, you can, is the bottom line. That still leaves land as the most important issue, but that's doable. You can get long-term leases anywhere. In fact, a lot of people in the United States want to have you use their land because of huge tax write-offs. And that's one way you can do that. I mean, they'd be paying X dollars for land that's unused in agriculture, and that figure drops way low because it's being used in agriculture, other use. So that's one way. I mean, you can get together with people to acquire land. You can collaborate to do that. You can get the land question in many ways. So from our experience, that hasn't been the stopping the block in this path. So we do want to talk about preservation of land for all future generations.
Can I ask something?
Go.
Sorry for shouting. I see that I've shocked you.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I was fascinated by your presentation. Amazing. Are you done with the presentation?
I'm not done, though.
Well, I want you to ask questions, so you should worry, yeah?
Why don't you just wait, because I might answer this. Okay. Let me just roll on here. But the land stewardship is what it boils down to. That's where all the resources come from. And the bottom line is access to land, because that's where all this, the metals, everything, your food, energy, housing, comes from that. So now let's go into some of the development process. Okay, the hardware is not the hard question. It's the social technology for organizing both the development process and the use and testing of it. You can't just put 30 random people together under this intention. It has to be an intentional community. Well, the present strategy is a complex hairball of a process that focuses on the design. You basically need to have a design, then you need to fund it through some process. And we have to go through a careful review and bid process by the community. So for example, say we come up with a torch table, well, we give it out to CNC groups and so forth, they can comment on it, and we evolve the design over time. So it's a totally iterative process. And the way we look at it is how we're leaning towards developing this is doing the due diligence with our core team that can be global. And at the point where we've got enough due diligence done, proposals can be written, including the fact that you have fabricators that can prove that are proven, that can build this stuff. So if we go through the development and funding cycles, what we want to do is invite people to come to Factory Farm, the experts who have the skills. They will come, you know, in a week, build something. We document it carefully, and the role of us is to make the transparency happen. But the point is, no one has cracked this hard development nut yet for scalable technology development. It's a battle. Bidding is something that MuseOpen, actually, I saw this on the web, MuseOpen uses a process where they have a product, then the crowd bids on it. When the bid is reached, you get the product, which is sheet music. Well, for us, defining the product first is a very hard part, because you have to do all the due diligence to know how much it will cost and so forth, and what it will do. It's not an easy question. But the same kind of pattern can be used. But how do you really do this? There's a lot of other details summarized here. There's no shortcuts here. It's a complex process. So we need your help. That's the point. I mean, there's different people that are working on different parts of this puzzle. And I'll skip this because we want to get discussion on this. The main things are one, but just to basic process, it's like you got to have a design, you go through iterative review, and then documentation on site, open production, open business model. The thing that the whole crowd could do is a lot of resource mapping. I mean, there's just so many things that go in to support this whole process. So somehow we have to break this whole thing down into pieces small enough that people can contribute meaningfully without being overwhelmed by building the world's first open source village. Not easy, though. Okay. Well, so it's time to define some standards and quality control. We start with OSI specifications, which I mentioned. You can look what that is on the wiki. But basically a set of principles, guiding principles that talk about the replicability, low cost, wide use, ecological design, things like modularity and scalability, just all the essential design features of what we do. We have red pages for development support, meaning questions, that simple outstanding questions. Just details. I'll continue. Well, I do have to say that there is good potential in this. This is transformative on many fronts. I mean, just the at-cost production concept, which I think is a natural spin-off of any open-source product development. I mean, we know that products are lower in cost. They're optimized for cost and performance by the types of principles that we've been discussing for the last 2 days here. So you can talk about a full local economy, local unjobs, local currency, economy, bank, currency. I mean, it's in there. And then as far as lifestyle engineering, if you can do something that is different than your 9-to-5, that would be great for many people. I wish I had that option to. I wish this thing was already there for me so that I could be autonomous of the matrix, right? That's a quest for perhaps a lot of us here. But this set, in principle, allows you to do that. Okay, so to summarize here, we do have some indications of promise of unprecedented quality of life. If you have basically the same trappings of society today, but also optimized for cost and service to the human, you can foresee that could happen. So our next major step to show one complete development cycle is the CEB press. And we do have some encouraging technical results. I mean, the technology just works. And if you simplify it, I mean, it's easy. It becomes easier and easier to produce it. It's not this mystique that the technological elite kind of leads you to believe. This should be in the hands of the people to really serve the people. But to do that, I mean, there's blocks in that. I mean, the collaboration platform of developing this process, the people's attention span, the skilled people at Factory Farm, Dream Team 30, we're finding out that it's hard to get any people with skills, with integrated skill sets, because we're forced by the present education to become specialized, of course. Totally disintegrated humans that cannot do generalized work, and that's a real problem. And the 90% problem that we refer to is the fact that if you're working for a regular job, I mean, you really don't have the time to commit to transformative work. When you come home from work, then you spend time recovering from your alienation for compensation type of job. So the next part is continue explaining the work more clearly, getting the team together. I think the next... We do have a PR plan, actually. This lady from London will hit the major newspapers and media channels after we're going to deploy the CEB press as the first test case of doing this for real and showing how the economics really work out, where we're looking at selling a high-performance machine at about $5,000, and that's the next competitor with the same performance is $30,000. So that's reasonable, but still we can capture... compete with the other options. So if we can show that, we're well on our way. So with that, I'd like to close up and ask for questions. Yeah. Okay.
Well, I find it personally speaking, this is amazing. I see this and I say, well, maybe I should quit my job and come to the farm. Yeah. Really honest about it. However, I don't have the grant to finance this enterprise. And again, only speaking for myself, I cannot see this grown any bigger unless we find a way to engage those people without requiring them to pay money.
Yeah.
Since, you know, they pay by their own labor, actually. Mm-hmm. They volunteer, they give their own self to this project. Do you see the realistic, possible, that is, within the short time, the next few years, let me put it like this, to be able to do this without asking people for money.
Absolutely. What you're seeing as the 10,000 a year program is after the 41 technologies are developed. What does that mean? That means we can already generate huge generative capacity in terms of economic power, right? So at that point, we'll give you financial aid. How about that? Okay. So, the bottom line is, you can pay once you join the program and you're
earnest student, you can easily pay for that tuition. And we might not even have the tuition. That's just a proposal. I don't know how this is going to look until we build it. But the deal is you can easily pay for that by production using the existing apparatus of the facility. So we are talking seriously about sweat equity as the way you can do this.
Labor power. You put labor power into this instead of money.
Yeah.
Maybe it's, you can switch back to the slide where you have all these concrete calculations on
calculations, yeah, the numbers,
yeah,
the two slides.
Yeah, this one.
There you go.
What does these 358 days mean? 358 days of 30 persons? That would be about 10,000 person days, right?
No, that's this is not clear. It was done too fast, but where you look at the propagation plant out of edible landscape, I'm breaking that down. The total that would take 6 months with one person using equipment such as tractors and augers and whatever equipment you need to set up a productive agricultural operation. So you have access to high power equipment and your skills. So we're hiring, we're simply saying we're going to hire a professional landscaper / permaculturist to set this up in about 6 months. I verified that with a person who's a permacultural designer, and he said the figure is in the ballpark. It's consistent with our figures from us planting out trees and setting up orchards and agriculture, things like fencing and greenhouse building. We've done all of this. We can get a kind of a feeling for what kind of requirements are there. And that's the strong point of our work. We're living with this stuff. We're exploring it deeply. And you see that, it's rough living. We're pioneers. But that's part of the experimental design. We're saying, hey, can we do that even if we have no money? Well, we had some money to start up to buy land that came out of our pockets. But after that, it's like, okay, let's build it from the ground up. That's our approach. But go ahead.
I mean, when I look at the video, I see that you are working on a very low productivity. I mean, there's lots and lots of handwork.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you have a factory producing fish, mm-hmm. you would need very, very less amount of handwork,
mm-hmm.
to have the same. So I wonder whether it doesn't make more sense to let people work for money and to spend the money, because in the money sector they are obviously much more productive than in your project.
Okay, and I have a very clear answer to that. That first, you're exactly right, and we're addressing that exactly because the design feature of this whole set is that you're producing optimal production. What you've seen with a CEB press is pathetic. A simple $500 machine that you can buy, a manual press can do what we've done. So we've seen the stopping blocks to this. First, the concept of a 15-person team that's needed to operate there. And so the next part is the full CEB press with a huge hopper, and then we take the tractor to that with the soil pulverizer, and it takes one person to operate the tractor, one person to unstack the bricks, 3,000 bricks per day. About 20-time factor productivity increase, or however that is, over 500 bricks. Well, that's 6-time factor productivity. So there's a 6 right there. We're talking about optimizing anything to the point that it's viable. It has to be better, bottom line, period. So if you're going out to work for the man in the city, our set is failing. So let's be clear about that. Yeah.
Just a footnote, the bricks are there where they're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
So the system is obviously eventually more efficient. It's localizing the productive capacities exactly there where they ought to where their results ought to have an impact.
Yeah. Okay.
Hi, I'm just wondering if you come across the garbage warrior.
No, I haven't.
Oh, you have to look at him. You have to look into him. It's a really interesting guy in New Mexico, started building areas, buildings simply based on sustainable materials. He's a very interesting fellow because I was originally an architect, and he threw it all away with his money. He started to build on land in New Mexico. Then he came across some really big legal challenges because they couldn't figure out what he was doing. He wasn't meeting any of the sort of prerequisites for what's required. So he ended up having to leave this one for a while. Then he got hired later to rebuild in the tsunami areas using all recyclable materials. This is the only time that the American government would listen to him. Has anyone come across him? Guard Warrior. So he ended up coming back, and now he's actually doing this again.
Okay, no, I'm okay. Earthships?
Yeah, he's got some in Brighton now.
Okay.
I mean, how were your ideas linked to? I mean, this is something.
There's a short answer and a long answer. The short answer is junket. Because that, if you look at an Earthship, for example, mm-hmm. it's highly non-replicable by the standards that we define in this set.
I think
it's extreme,
you're right,
extreme labor requirements.
Yeah.
So you take the CV press and you line up against him against us, it will be done about 10 to 100 times faster.
This isn't a competition, this is an open source.
Yeah, no, that's good. But at the same time, let's set our standards higher.
No, but my question is actually this, so I should have said it. Have you looked into where you'd be doing this, that's all? What kinds of restrictions would you come across? Like in his experience, and how would
us.
You be able to, manage this?
Well,
just because he's had this experience, and he fought for like 10 years, and then finally, because he was called over to tsunami area.
Applications for this is both mainstream and natural living scenarios, industrial buildings, and everything in between. We're talking about a sawmill and CEB press. The CEB bricks are already accepted by codes in various places.
Okay.
Now, if you talk about our particular place, we got into a place that has no building codes, none of these legal restrictions that you have, so we can experiment.
That's
and until we get it right, we want to be left alone to experiment. So that's our approach.
Okay.
Yeah. How about you?
I can see you've got your work kind of just trying to do what you're doing here to kick things off. But do you see getting to a point in the future where things like computational equipment, more advanced sort of electrical equipment, are you going to aim towards that later on, do you think? Is that part of the plan?
Naturally, yes, it totally is. And your local ecology of any land parcel, you've got aluminum silicates that can be refined to aluminum and silicon. So that's common. Absolutely. I mean, at first I was like, oh man, no way, this computer stuff and all that, I can't even fathom how they get the things so small. But when you study it, it's like there's all techniques, and I think this could also be done on a very small scale. So we're going to be able to produce that pretty soon. For now, we're restricting ourselves to this just to show the fuel, food, all that. But yeah, it's not, I mean, the bottom line is, it's if you have energy, which, by the way, is 4 megawatts per acre. Okay, so imagine we succeed at the solar turbine. You can convert that. The efficiency of a system like that is proven at 10%. You can be getting 400,000 watts of power. I mean, that's more than enough to, for a sizable village or city.
I mean, even in Missouri. Even in Missouri.
Even in Missouri for the.
Yeah, the energy harvest is very, very different according to the area.
Okay, let me address that. So in the Southwest, this is proven, in fact, economically sustainable today, competitive with the mainstream right now. So if you get the price reduction of this system, a factor of 2, that means you can accept a place with twice as little sun. And that's what we're talking about. So you get the price down, and our predictions are, in fact, at least 2. I mean, they're more like 5 for the solar turbine system, which means that you can run all of North, just about the entire North. No limits are put on you by the fact that you have to go to the desert. No. You go to other areas as well, much farther north. In fact, there's a solar heat power energy generation system open source project out of Canada. This guy's talking about devising systems for Canada. So the answer is, hey, it's covered. Don't worry about it.
It's still following the question.
Yeah.
It's
the only reason why you left wind completely out of the energy infrastructure? Because we're actually talking about wind, and it's much easier to build something converting wind to electrical energy than your solar approach, I would say.
You would have to run that through the product selection metric, and you will tell me the score, and you will see why it fails. Mm-hmm. It's intermittent, and not all places have usable wind like that. For example, at our facility, we would have to put the turbine pretty much well on the northern part, which is about, it's like a half a kilometer up, because that's the top of the hill. We can't put it where the buildings are right now. So, but the solar is much more robust as a feasible energy source anywhere. So it's just a more robust solution. Now, that's not to say that the wind is not...
So the normal approach will high approach would be to mix these two sources. So you got biomass, and then you got solar, and you're missing one third of your possible sources. And only by combining the three of them, I would assume that you get the cheapest and best use of energy.
The only challenge to that is that would add the set to a total of 42, not 41. Okay.
Who do you think you're appealing with your project to? Who do you think is candidate to work in your project? I mean, I'm not, for instance, because I don't like all this handwork.
Who is a candidate? I mean, it's someone else. Someone else can answer it. Well, I mean, the history has, or the experience has shown that it's people who are familiar with things like from agriculture to carpentry, or the libertarian types, the people who see deep issues with the system. They're the ones that say, "Okay, I'm going to do something about it." So for me, I would have no clue that I'm going to be doing this, but I see it as a need. So I see that kind of motivation, those types of motivated people. Could be anyone. It's just someone has to be committed to doing this.
Do you have a candidate somewhere else in the world for enough posts or reproduction?
No way. No, I mean, we're struggling with that issue. We've got two people on site right now. There's two people that want to join us. We're going to have 9 people actually by the summer. I don't know how many of them are going to stay. I mean, the social technology issue ain't easy. Like these two people right now that we have. I mean, they're like perfect in all respects, but the gatekeeping actually has to be high because we don't have enough resource. So unless the person that comes in brings the resource, no, we have to be very selective. And that is one of the social technology challenges. Okay, yeah.
My question is in a similar direction. I think your approach is very consistent. Also, it's very radical because you want to go completely off the grid. You want to kind of drop out of society and build your own. And I think for many people, it would be maybe more attractive if you have access to some of the amazing technologies you are talking about, but they don't want to kind of drop out of society. They want to stay in the city and something. And maybe did you think about some more integrated approach where you're interacting with people who are using some of this technology, but not in this making this radical break with society? That was my first remark. And another one, because if you really want to build your own society, there are some points where you didn't speak about, for example, healthcare that needs very expensive equipment, it needs specialists which are dedicated and so on. Did you also think about such issues?
Absolutely. I think I've got decent answers for both. First of all, the set is just a tool set, so how you use it is up to you.
Hmm.
It could totally be used for generating new villages, like in the United States. There's so much land. But here, you might have to bulldoze your cities and or whatever. You can fill it in. You can, if there's any place that's just collapsing, build it up with new tools. As far as the second question, that's actually already being addressed. For example, open source NMR, open source X-rays, that's out there. So. Once again, it's the mystique. We think this is all inaccessible, but it's not. And that's the whole point of this. We're showing just radical cost reductions. I mean, for some items, it's easily factors of 10 to 50 because all that cost is embodied in the intellectual property costs and all the proprietary costs, the costs of waste. And if you look under the hood of these technologies, it's doable. Okay, Michelle.
I see really a long transitional time because you
when everything will be working, then of course your income, you know, selling your labor and everything. But up until that moment, which should take quite a bit of time, you're not. And I remember reading a study of intentional communities, and I think the conclusion was that none of them was self-sufficient. None of them. They were all doing therapy or education, or they helped so people, you know, money to be enlightened. I mean, there's a wide range of motivations that, and what kept them going was not the internal self-sufficiency. You know, even what's the name in England here, Finhorn. They're not self-sufficient. They're all relying on outside support.
Just on Finhorn.
Yeah.
Finhorn would be if they didn't have visitors. So they do grow enough food to feed everyone that lives there full time.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a second remark, which is a little bit like Stefan. You know, I'm a guy with two left hands, right? And it seems a little bit, in the most negative interpretation, a little bit survivalist, right? So, you know, what kind of living standard can you give to people who do that? And so isn't it only going to be like attractive to people, you know, in villages in the developing world? Or to extreme idealists, who, you know, as you say, people who really want to change society?
Yeah, the first question is about intentional communities. Yeah, they suck. I mean, that's simple. I mean, I studied quite a bit of them. But my complaint about them is, okay, they go isolate themselves in these villages that try to live right, you know, get their expensive solar cells, and then go Monday, go work for the man in the city. And that's what most of these people do. Very not impressive. And in fact, like eco-village, I don't like using that word because I think it's a bad word, almost. I like the word global village. So, yes, that's absolutely an issue. And as a very practical case scenario, talk to us in about 2 months. See what's happening with the CEB press. Because if, okay, I can produce this, I can generate some wealth from that once people are buying. We've got a couple of people, without advertising, already several people have said that they would buy this, right? So, and if we can basically get two, or well, at the point where we have the production ability, we can simply even hire somebody, or I mean, they could work under, you know, we can even pay them. They might not necessarily be part of the kind of core psychology, the core open source nature. I mean, there's possibilities. I hope it will be a person that joins the team now because they can support themselves. But I think the options are let loose once you have economic power. That's what this is about. And as far as the second question about the standard of living that you can achieve with this, well, I mean, the claim, that's like a kind of follow-up to Stefan's question. We're just after the most optimal techniques. So we're making a claim that if you have that, then you can get the highest standard of living. We're not taking the trade anywhere out of this equation. Once again, it's the tool set. It will empower you to be very productive. But the real, just to address, okay, say the system remains mainstream, like kind of like it is today, just take every sector and give them new decentralized tools. So in that scenario, like, for example, now every organic farmer now can do a full year-round CSA with grains and so forth because they have the combine, for example, or tractors that aren't costing them a lot in maintenance every year. They can just simply improve their operations quite a bit. So that will benefit you if you don't want to go all the way and actually be productive yourself. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. This is a bootstrapping process, and the case of bootstrapping will begin with the CEB. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. The man from over the pond.
I've had the pleasure of visiting the farm, and so I'd love to field additional questions.
And quitting after 1 week.
So if people are interested in what it's like to see what Martin is doing on site, I'm happy to answer from another perspective. Yeah, one of the things I would like to say, though, is that it is a magical thing to consider that you can have a shared infrastructure system that is viral also, like what we've done with software, and see that propagate planet-wide. And the vision of, I've surveyed CSAs across the United States. I've talked to them about their economic models, their market penetration. I've done all kinds of research on co-op behavior. But if we're talking about actually replacing the infrastructure and the entire supply chain for these types of operations, you are going to see the birth of a whole depth of economic interactivity that we fly over right now. We don't deal with this stuff. We leave it to Ford. We let them choose how they're going to deliver to us, where they get their steel from, and where they get their power from. And we can help with this. That is what Martian is really offering, at least as a vision.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every day the work on the CEB press has 18 forks in the road that it hits, and all these ideas that you have about what better way to do it. And the idea is to get one of these things working. I mean, we've seen the open source car initiative go through, 8 years of iterations and all of these other things. We have these hardware products that are coming online. You've seen the open mobile devices. You've seen these OSs. But this is hardware. Marchand is producing accounting that is going on the wiki. He is investing currency. And I don't know how many of us know the feeling. I mean, what's it like when you buy your new computer? If you're lucky, you get a new computer every year. Okay? Marchand's put tens of thousands of dollars into producing equipment that other people can't touch. You can touch your computer, and pretty soon you're going to be able to. He's not just going to give you blueprints. He's going to tell you what kind of welder you need, what you need to learn about welding, where you would rent it, what kind of steel you need in order to use it with. I mean, it's this whole other thing with hardware. And I know a lot of you have touched some of this before, but it's kind of wild. And it's weird, and it does cost money because things do. There's resources, there's energy exchange happening. So it's a really interesting thing. And if you haven't touched some sort of hardware process method somewhere, I highly recommend it. Not just pimping for margin, but anything, because it's a mindfuck. It really is. It tears apart the entire economic industrial system that we have, the transnational system.
Yeah, thanks. We are about a viral village, so subscribe. We do encourage you to subscribe. Like right now, for example, with the True Fans campaign that we spawned, we wanted to say, hey, 1,000 people, come on and sign up at $10 per month to support this work for the next 2 years so that this thing gets developed at a budget of $10,000 per month. Now, we're at 35 people. It's bad. We started this about 2 months ago, 2 to 3 months ago. That's not working. I know that once we get the CEB press in production, we're going to get massive publicity, and maybe we can increase that. But I mean, the real deal is to produce. So maybe to basically live our word, yeah, maybe that thing is just part of it. Yeah, we're not going to get funded, and maybe we have to show that you really can produce it. But I still do encourage all of you to subscribe. It's on our main wiki page. Okay, Dante.
My concern is this topic of converging resources, whether it's dollars or sweat or.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's to go on what you were saying, and also what Stefan was saying. Stefan asked who's interested when we try to evaluate which kind of individual is interested in participating. I think it's also interesting when you see which kind of groups or which kind of. which kind of groups might be interested. I'm just thinking, for example, nearby Geneva. There are a lot of plots of land where a lot of developers would like to build houses, but they don't because the regulations that date back from quite some time, which are supposed to keep a certain amount of land free to maintain autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I feel is a very, very good point to converge resources, that a lot of people are interested in autonomy. Some individuals, like we're saying, very little individuals want to have much more autonomous lifestyles but then maybe also societies. Like in Switzerland, I think autonomy is quite important. And I think this is something that can be sold in exchange of.
You can, sure. I mean, help us. The word is always, you just volunteered. Thanks. Can you find some of these communities and transform or basically translate our work into a proposal for them?
I'm in. And I understand you in Amsterdam for the moment.
Yep.
I'm not far. I've probably seen in a few days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's make it happen. It's open source, and Jaco said that too.
Yeah, Jaco is in Rotterdam. I mean, this hardware stuff is great. I make software. I make open source software. This is next for me, so I can do both.
All right.
I think you can too.
And Vinay.
All right. So
man.
Looking a little further into the future,
Okay.
Tell me of the orbital laser platform plans.
What?
Tell me how the orbital laser platform plans are going.
All right. No, this is bottom line. This is serious work, and but it's for everybody. Yeah.
I think we have to close the first session now.
All right. Well.
It's more or less four of them already.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot. It was great.